You're complaining about 30 degrees Celsius? They lived through 50. No fans, no water coolers, just cloth, heat, and burning sand. The desert shows no mercy. But the Bedouins survived where others fell, holding on to knowledge we've long forgotten. Who were the Bedouins? Nomads who lived for generations in some of the most unforgiving places on Earth. The deserts of Arabia, North Africa, Sinai, and Syria. Their lives weren't just a struggle against nature. They formed an alliance with it. They didn't chase the shade. They learned to live with the heat, embracing it as part of themselves. No pavement, no electricity, no saving shadows. Their homes were tents, their roads, sand, their laws, the wind and the sun. And in that all-consuming heat, they didn't just survive. They raised families, raised children, and traveled hundreds of kilometers without leaving a trace. They knew secrets, the kind that could still save lives in the age of climate crisis. In the heart of the desert, the sun doesn't just warm, it scorches. The sand beneath your feet burns like metal in a forge. The air hangs heavy, like it's boiling. In a place where water can boil inside a goatskin bag just from the heat, every exposed inch of skin is a step closer to death. But the Bedouins knew the truth. You can't fight the heat. You can only survive it if you dress right. Their clothing wasn't just fabric. It was engineering, perfected over centuries. At first glance, it seems wrong. Why wear black heavy robes in such intense heat? But that's exactly where the genius lies. The abaya, a loose, multi-layered cloak, doesn't cling to the body. It hangs freely, creating pockets of air between the fabric and the skin. And that air gap is everything. As the outer layer heats up, it pulls the hot air upward, drawing moisture and heat away from the skin, like a chimney. The body stays shaded, and it doesn't overheat. Research from Ben Gurion University found something surprising. When the cut is the same, black clothing doesn't make the body any hotter than white. In fact, black fabric heats up faster on the outside, but thanks to convection, it pulls more heat away from the skin. Air flows continuously between the layers, creating a natural ventilation system. The key isn't color, it's the loose, layered design. Every part of the body is covered, not because of tradition, because of survival. Bare skin in the desert is like wet paper near a flame. It loses moisture instantly, and water is life's currency. The Bedouins understood. If you keep your sweat, you keep your strength. The less you evaporate, the longer you live. Even the lips are covered, to protect from cracks, windburn, and the dry rasp of desert breathing. Only the eyes are visible, and even those are often narrowed behind the folds of a keffiyeh. The keffiyeh is a long piece of cloth, tightly wrapped around the head and lower face. It shields not just from sun and sand, but from overheating your airways. The air you breathe gets filtered, humidified, and cooled, so it doesn't scorch your lungs. And during the hottest hours, Bedouins took it further. They moistened the inner layers of their clothing as much as they could afford. That water evaporated right on their skin, cooling the body using the same principle behind modern evaporative coolers. Bedouin clothing isn't about looks. It's a survival tool. Without it, you wouldn't last a few hours in the open sun. With it, you can walk through the desert in broad daylight and avoid heat stroke. It's not tradition, it's precision. A centuries-old system built for life in the fire. Permanent homes were a luxury the Bedouins couldn't afford. A nomadic life demanded mobility. But that didn't mean they lived without comfort. Their shelter, Beit al-Sha'ar, the House of Hair, was the result of generations of trial, error, and observation. It protected them from heat, cold, wind, and dust. No electricity, no stone, no glass. Just wool, ropes, and precision. The tent was woven by hand from goat hair, a thick, heavy fabric that could still breathe. The fibers had a rare property. When dry, they allowed air to pass through. When damp, they swelled and retained moisture. This gave the tent a built-in cooling effect. At night, the fabric absorbed moisture from the air. During the day, the sun evaporated that moisture, cooling the interior in the process. Studies have shown that this natural mechanism could lower the inside temperature by 8 to 10 degrees Celsius compared to the outside, especially with proper ventilation. On summer days, the side walls were lifted to allow air to flow upward. With a height of about 2 meters, warm air rose and cooler air settled near the ground. That's where life happened, where people sat, food was stored, and water was kept. The location of the tent was never random. The ideal spot was a shallow dip at the base of a dune or slope, somewhere shaded from the midday sun and rich with morning moisture. The entrance was always turned north or northeast, facing the gentler breeze. In places where the wind blew hot and dry, they'd set up extra fabric or stone barriers for protection. Inside, everything had its place. The center was usually left open, sometimes dug into a shallow pit and lined with carpets. It worked like a natural cellar. Clay pots with water, food, or medicine were stored there. Anything that needed to be kept cool. The deeper the sand, the lower the temperature. Even in blistering heat, that pit could stay at 25 degrees Celsius, while outside it soared past 45. In winter, the same tent was transformed. Walls were dropped to the ground. Extra fabric was added for insulation. A fire was lit in the center. This one simple structure became a home, a kitchen, and a shelter, all year round. And if the environment changed, they could pack it up in under 30 minutes and move on. But the fabric wasn't just for temperature control. Goat hair blocks most ultraviolet rays. That took the strain off their eyes and skin. Even without sunglasses or sunscreen, Bedouins could spend all day outside without burns. The strong fibers survived dozens of teardowns and rebuilds. These tents were passed down through generations, repaired, adapted, and used for years. In the desert, time isn't measured by clocks. It's measured by the sun, and the Bedouins knew exactly when to move, and when to conserve even their breath. A wrong schedule out here wasn't just inconvenient, it was dangerous. As soon as the sun rises, the desert begins to heat up fast. By 9 a.m., the sand burns bare feet. By noon, it can reach 70 degrees Celsius. At that point, any exertion, physical or even mental, puts intense strain on the body. So, from mid-morning to late afternoon, the Bedouins would pause. Not just stop working, they would stop everything. Movement, conversation, eating. Silence took over. During this time, they lay in deep shade or under heavy blankets, often with eyes closed, saying nothing. Everything slowed, heart rate, breathing, metabolism. Every movement creates heat. Every word loses moisture. Even an extra thought could mean one more drop of sweat. In the desert, survival doesn't belong to the active, but to the still. Their windows of activity were limited to two, before 9 a.m. and after 5 p.m. At dawn, the air was still cool from the night, the sand bearable, and the breeze refreshing. That's when they fed the animals, traveled, gathered water, and cooked. After sunset, life resumed, moving camp, talking, working again. Much of the travel happened at night, under moonlight, when the path was still visible, but the heat had passed. Bedouins never walked in a straight line. They followed the shadows, even if it doubled the distance. In the desert, the goal isn't speed, it's avoiding heat. The main meal came only in the evening. Heavy food during the day overheats the organs, pulls blood to the stomach, and raises sweat levels. So daytime meant just small bites, a few dates, some milk, a piece of flatbread. The real meal came after sunset, when the body was no longer fighting the sun. Sleep was segmented. They didn't rest in one long stretch, but in short cycles. They woke up at the slightest wind, shift in temperature, or unfamiliar sound. It wasn't a disruption. It was adaptation. In the desert, awareness meant survival, even in your sleep. A Bedouin's life didn't revolve around hours. It revolved around the body. He could feel time in the heat of the sand, the direction of the wind, the dampness of the air. He could wake just minutes before sunrise, without ever setting an alarm. Even when planning a journey, they didn't rely only on instinct. They watched the breath and behavior of their camels. If the animal began to breathe faster, it meant the heat had reached a critical point, and the trip had to be delayed or rerouted. Camels overheat slowly, but they signal danger early, long before humans feel the warning signs. This allowed the Bedouins to stop in time, find shade, and avoid dehydration. In the desert, there's no fridge, no faucet, no reserves. All you have is what you can carry. That's why the Bedouins never ate a lot, but they ate with precision. Their diet was simple, but crafted to deliver maximum energy with the least strain on the body. The foundation was dates, dried, lightweight, and able to last for weeks without spoiling. One date held carbs, fiber, minerals, and a bit of moisture. They ate them by the handful, for energy, for movement, for strength. Alongside dates, they drank milk, from camels or goats, rich in fat, vitamins, and even mild antiseptic properties. Together, dates and milk could easily replace a full meal. Next came fat. Animal fat, butter, milk fat. All high in calories and slow to release energy. They didn't eat much, but what they ate kept them going for hours. And it didn't overheat the body, since it required very little water to digest. The golden rule was smart eating, small portions, high density. Food shouldn't make you thirsty, so they avoided anything overly salty, fried, or heavy. No steaming soups or scorching hot dishes. Heat from food was seen as a risk. Only what preserved body moisture, minimized sweating, and digested without extra effort made the cut. And when it came to water, not a single drop was wasted. Every sip was measured, no big gulps. That only overloaded the stomach and triggered sweating. They drank rarely in small amounts, often just enough to moisten the mouth. Even in deep thirst, the goal wasn't to feel full. It was to retain moisture. Water was stored in goatskin bags called burdocks. They weren't airtight. Their tiny pores let air pass through, allowing moisture to evaporate from the surface. That evaporation cooled the water inside. The drier the air, the stronger the cooling effect. Even under blazing sun, the water inside a burdock could be 10 to 12 degrees Celsius cooler than the outside temperature. Another trick was storing supplies in sand, food, water skins, even medicine, buried just 30 to 40 centimeters deep and covered with rugs or sacks. That shallow layer of earth worked like a natural fridge. The temperature underground could be half of what it was on the surface, and it worked anywhere in the desert. If food ran low, they'd skip meals, but never skip water. If water ran low, they'd switch to milk, and if they had neither, they stayed still, waited out the heat, and conserved every last bit of strength and moisture. Clothing, water, and shade. That's the baseline. But in the desert, it's not enough. Survival depended on the smallest details. How you sat, what you sat on, how you moved, how you breathed. The entire body had one mission: to keep internal heat under control and prevent dangerous overheating. Rule number one, never sit directly on the sand. Even in the shade, sand holds heat longer than the air. Bedouins always used insulation, a rug, a thick cloth, an animal skin, to block heat from seeping into the body. This was especially critical during rest, when the body wasn't moving and had no airflow to cool it. Rule number two, maximize shade, even from your own clothing. If there was no tree, rock, or tent nearby, they made their own. They crouched, wrapped themselves in fabric, leaned forward to cast shadows. Anything to reduce direct sunlight and limit moisture loss. Sometimes they would cover themselves completely, head to toe, leaving only a narrow gap for air. Inside that capsule, the temperature was actually lower than outside. Movements were slow and deliberate. Sudden gestures triggered fast breathing and unnecessary sweat. Even shifting position was like a ritual, slow, calculated, intentional. They kept a straight posture, not slouched, to ease the pressure on the diaphragm and allow deep, steady breathing without losing water through the mouth. Breathing was always through the nose, slow and controlled. In the heat, rapid breathing speeds up dehydration and heats the body from within. Bedouins trained themselves to hold their breath while walking, pause after exhaling, and even enter a semi-sleep state, where the body rested, but the mind stayed alert to the environment. One key tactic was cooling critical zones. If water was limited, and it usually was, they didn't pour it over the whole body, just the wrists, neck, and face. These areas are rich in blood vessels, and cooling them could bring the entire body temperature down. It used only a few drops, but the relief was instant. And above all, never panic. In the desert, anxiety meant a spike in adrenaline, a racing heart, and a flood of sweat. Calm wasn't just a personality trait. It was a physical survival tool. Bedouins learned to stay cool, not just in their minds, but in their bodies, controlling heat through breath, posture, and thought. The Bedouins never tried to conquer the desert. It wasn't an enemy. It was an environment. One you didn't adapt to, but became a part of. Out here, survival didn't belong to the strongest. It belonged to the quietest, the calmest, the most precise. Desert psychology was discipline, refined into instinct. The core principle: don't fight the heat, don't rush, don't trick your body, don't try to power through. The sand, the wind, and the sun, they're always stronger, but they don't strike first. The Bedouin didn't battle them. He became invisible to them. No sound, no sudden movement, just another shape on the horizon. If you enjoyed this video, give it a like and subscribe to our channel so you don't miss what's coming next. And don't forget to check out our other videos, where we uncover the darkest and most mysterious corners of history.